The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If we're talking about faking it till you make it in terms of acting the parts, maybe that's like a little bit like character type thing. Mm-hmm. Like if you are the person like, God, I really want to complain, but I'm going to pretend I'm the type of person that doesn't complain. Don't pretend. If faking it, then over a period of time, that will be, if you're the type of person that, you know, you want to get in the habit of something, maybe that's a better precursor. If you're trying to get in the habit of something, fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. But don't be unauthentic.
We are here because we know the outcomes in our lives are within our control. That taking absolute ownership of how we eat, sleep, train, think, and connect with each other is how we'll optimize our health and happiness. That chasing excellence is how we grab hold of what is possible. Our mission is to live on the run. Always chasing, never stopping. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Chasing Excellence. How are you, Ben?
I'm good, Patrick. Thank you.
For those not watching the video, you are wearing a collared shirt. It's kind of freaking me out.
This is the first time ever, I think, right?
Yeah. I feel very undressed, or underdressed rather. I feel very undressed.
Whoa.
That'd be a different podcast. Okay, so today we're going to do another one of our favorite episodes of 2-Minute Drills, which is me going through my Instagram DMs and picking out a bunch of really good questions from listeners on topics that sort of span the what's the word I'm looking for?
Spectrum.
Spectrum is a good word. Yeah. Span the spectrum of subjects that we hit on here. So the constraint is that you're supposed to answer these in under 2 minutes. Sometimes that happens. You're actually, as we do this, you get better at that.
Without talking faster.
Yeah, without talking faster. So we'll see how we do today. First question. You've talked about the different training zones before, but can you talk about how to balance your training across each zone? Is one better than the other? Should we be hitting each zone throughout the week, et cetera?
So to put a little context to what this question is asking for those that don't understand, training zones mean they're loosely correlated to your heart rate. I shouldn't say loosely, they're fairly correlated to your heart rate. So zone one is just like a little bit of activity. You're going for a walk, you're doing some gardening. Zone two is you're working. But I actually like to use, instead of heart rates, because it's different for everybody, I actually like to use like how comfortable you are holding a conversation.
Yeah, right.
So zone two would be kind of you're working, but you can still hold a normal conversation. There wouldn't be no extra pauses. I would be in zone two right now, but I'm working, I'm sitting on a bike, and I could still talk like this. Yep. Zone three is essentially you're working hard enough, but every now and then you'd have to take a few breaks, and maybe it's like you're spitting out fractions of a sentence at a time. Yep. Zone four, if someone was to have a conversation, you'd only be answering in 1 to 2 word sentences with big breaks. You'd have to time it well. You're like, you know, someone says like, you know, like you want to go grab some coffee after this? And you're like, you have to wait to be like, yes.
Yeah.
It's actually like, yeah, let's go to Pete's or yes, let's go to Starbucks. You'd have to like, you're working hard. Zone five is somebody asks you a question and you can't even answer, right? There would be no words that would be coming out because you're just like, you're grasping for air. Yep. So the question becomes, I know I took a long time just putting parameters around that. Should you be varying it? How much time do you spend at each one? The answer is, it depends, as probably everything, you know. If you're going to be training for a marathon, you're going to be spending a lot more time in zone two. If you're training to be a sprinter, you're going to be spending a lot more time in zone five. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're looking for overall health, yes, you want to span the gaps across all of them, but you want to spend the most time for the most bang of your buck in zone four. Zone four is essentially your lactic or anaerobic or aerobic. Put them all, just go ahead and lump them all in there. It's your threshold.
Got it.
So I know that there is like some people say anaerobic is one, aerobic is another, but it's kind of that like, it's not, I should preface that. It's not your anaerobic. Anaerobic would be zone five, mm-hmm. but essentially it's that place where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. So 3, 4, 5 times a week, you should be spending time in zone four. Now, the cool part about that, if you do CrossFit smartly, You're doing that already. Mm-hmm. You do it smartly. You're not coming out guns a-blazing, busting up and falling to pieces at the 2 minute mark. You're sustainable and you're working really, really, really hard for that 6 to 16 minutes. Now, if you do CrossFit, but at the end you're like, high fives, that was great. Like, and you never like go to a knee. You don't put your hands on your knees. You don't kind of like bend over out of breath. Maybe you're just kind of, you're not quite used to pushing it and you're in zone three. Mm-hmm. We want to try to edge our way up there. Even if you're spending that much time in zone four, now I'm starting to talk fast. You want to spend time at the fringes of five and three and even spend some time in zone two. Mm. Get on a bike and spin real easy for 20 minutes. There's value in that.
Got it. Next question. If your significant other is also your coach, what can you do when there are conflicts? And I guess you could flip that because your experience is probably if you coach
you are the coach, if yeah, regardless, exactly. Is a coach-athlete relationship with a spouse. Yep. How do you deal with conflicts? Well, I don't think you need to put the parameters around the nature of the relationship. It's how do you deal with conflict?
Right.
That's
yeah, in the gym isn't any different.
It's problem. Right. Yeah. Yeah, what we do inside the gym echoes in eternity. So so the idea behind that is it's normal. People smarts, emotional intelligence, but further down the road and you get to a little more specific thing called tactful conflict resolution. So no matter how people smart you are, no matter how emotionally aware you are of things, there's still going to be conflict that can present itself, and knowing the appropriate steps on how to solve that conflict tactfully is what you want to put in place. So a lot of things go, it's kind of a step-by-step process. The first thing is distrust your natural gut reaction, which is if there's conflict, you hormonal response, fight or flight. You're going to clam up. You're going to want to defend yourself. They're wrong. You're right. It's like you have to move past that. You just have to. You have to say, here it is. I'm starting to feel it. Mm-hmm. And you have to get past that feeling. The next thing you want to do, literally in order, in your head, is say, okay, there's that feeling. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to listen and put the right adjective before or after that you want. Sincere, active, aggressive, passionate, whatever you want to put in those, but really listen. Yeah. Don't do what most people do, which is formulate your response, AKA now you're going to be debating. Right. If you're formulating your response while they're talking, you're not trying to feel their side. You're trying to combat, here's my response, here's my argument, here's what I'm going to say. We need to move past that. So sincerely or authentically listen. The next one is from there is the first words that come out of your mouth are, thank you. Like, and it'll just diffuse the situation because they'll be like, whoa, I thought we were going to be fighting. I thought we were going to have this conflict. I thought we were going to be going at each other. And you're saying, thank you. And what thank you says is like, thank you for bringing that to my attention. I didn't realize you were feeling that way. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. That's something I've been working on. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. We can now be better because of this. Thank you for dot, dot, dot. And now we're on the same side trying to find this solution together. The next thing you want to do is involve them. What do you think? So really simple. It's tactful conflict resolution. It doesn't change if you're husband, wife, if you're coach, athlete, if you're parent, teacher, boss, employee, or if you're strangers on the street. It's all the same deal.
Does it often, or has it often felt harder though with a significant other or somebody you're that close to?
Because your family makes it harder.
That's the question. Is like,
yes,
because I totally get it. And then immediately, I think the last time this happened to me, I did a really bad job of it.
Yeah.
And it's, and for whatever reason, it's because it's the people you're closest to, this is the hardest, right?
Yeah. So if, so what will end up happening is if it's somebody that you, really respect or something like, or not, an authority figure, you're more likely in real life to kind of default back to it. But when it's a family member, like you're on equal level footing.
Yeah.
So all that's happening is you're going like, no, I can beat them. That's all that's happening. And if it's the opposite, if you're the superior, then you're like, well, they're not going to push back on me. Right. So it's like, it's the only reason that happens is because it's equal level footing. It's equal playing field.
Yeah.
So now the first step just gets exaggerated. The first step is like, oh, you're attacking me. Like, I'm going to beat you down that's on this. Exactly the defenses go up even higher.
Yep.
So it doesn't change. You just have to be more aware of step one.
Yep. Okay. Next question. I'm a registered nurse, but it's not something I'm truly passionate about anymore. I've realized that I want to be a firefighter, but it's going to take me some time to get there. My question is, how do I find happiness in doing a job I dislike and that brings me stress and unhappiness?
What a person. Like, they're going from a nurse to a firefighter. Yeah. That's awesome. Like, very cool. Okay. So the question was, how do I
say it again? Knowing that where she wants to go is a little bit unattainable today. It's a she, but okay. In this case, only because I know.
Okay.
But it could very well easily be a male. I know where I want to go, but I'm not there yet. And so in the meantime, while I figure out how to get there, I'm in a place that like, that
causes me stress. Should I stay in the job and be miserable or should I?
Or what do I do knowing that I am in this thing and knowing that this thing isn't going to make me happy and I have a sense of what's going to make me happy.
Okay. So if it was my wife, her answer would be leave now. Mm-hmm. Leave the job now. You're better off being, adding some other different stressors to your life. Maybe you don't know exactly where the paycheck's coming from. Maybe you can't take the vacation that you wanted to. Maybe you have to downsize your apartment or get a cheaper car. But what you're doing on an everyday basis is so freaking important to your fulfillment and happiness and who you feel you are as a person. You cannot continue to go on like that. It's eating you alive. You don't know if you have another month on this planet or another millennium on this planet. You got to like make every day count. My answer, I'd be like, yes, exactly. That's exactly what I'd say. But man, it's hard.
Right.
That would be mine. Like, I like to think that that's what I would do, but I'm a little bit more cautious. I'm not as passionate as she is.
As Heather is.
So I think that what I might do is try to get a little bit of ducks in a line as quickly as I possibly could, whether that is saving some money, whether that is doing those things I said, like I would look for a different apartment. I'd be able to like, I need to, you know, I say that, but I actually did that. I was in this situation. I was working a job I did not like. It flipped in my head, I was like, wow, I really don't like this. I decided to move on, but I didn't move. I gave my company a 6-week notice. So I do play, I kind of hedge the bets a little bit. I gave my company a 6-week notice instead of the normal, like I'm leaving tomorrow because they wanted it. And that's when I left and eventually became, came into the fitness world. Yeah. So, I do not think this person, if the firefighter thing ever doesn't pan out, and that should not be the litmus test of should I move on or not. Regardless of whether that's there, you cannot stay in a job that you do not like, you are not passionate about, that you do want to move on from, that's stressing you out, and you do like, you got to move on. Yeah. You just got to figure out what's the lead time for that. Are you going to give yourself a year, 6 months, or 6 days? Right. But you got to make that choice. Yeah. And don't say it'll happen soon. Like, make it specific. Give yourself, it's arbitrary, but a deadline.
Totally. And the thing I think about there is one of the things that if you look at people who we culturally consider like really big risk takers, like Richard Branson, for an example, right? Or Elon Musk. One of the things, it looks like they take a lot of risk, but actually they do, the ones who do it well are the ones kind of like you said, where you gave a 6-week notice instead of a 2-week. They do everything possible to mitigate the risk.
Yeah.
Because they're not risk takers. They're not risk takers, kind of like jump off the bridge and figure it out. It's I'm gonna do everything in my power to make sure that the risk is minimized.
Yeah.
And then when I do that, I'm comfortable to take the one step necessary to
it's jump what we talk about all the time, right? Like what's inside your control. Like it's you don't need to like just jump off the bridge and hope that you literally like grow wings on the way down. You can start building your wings before you take the leap.
Yeah.
This is not so you can start to, as you said, which I love, like mitigate the risk. Put everything you can that's under your control. Do what you can there.
Yeah. And I guess the first part of that is verbalize and recognize where that.
Well, they're already a long step away. Most people. Kudos to her, because most people just stay in the job and don't even realize how miserable they are.
Yeah.
They've never found that other passion. Like,
In a previous episode, Ben mentioned he allows coaches to date members, saying it helps create a tighter knit community. What is his approach to coaches dating other coaches? And how would he handle a situation where one of these relationships ends and gets ugly and whatever that means, drama, verbal arguments, awkward social media, et cetera.
Okay. So first a clarifier, a tighter knit community not because these people are dating each other, because they're going to date each other anyway. That's going to happen. You're not going to stop because you have a policy or a contract in place.
Right.
So the reason it creates a tighter knit community is because now they don't feel like they need to go behind your back and do it.
Right.
That's what creates a tighter community. So the second piece of that is, so these two people are dating and now they're going to break up and now there's lots of drama, social media, people acting badly, whatever it might be. So what you do is no different. This is no different than if if it was any other thing that was causing drama. It doesn't matter what the reason is. What you should be doing is analyzing your people. And the way you do that is through the filter of your core values and their performance in the job. So the performance of the job, and this is stolen from Gino Wickman and EOS stuff, is the performance of the job is, do they get it? Do they want it? Do they have the capacity to do it? Do they get it? Do they understand the role? Do they understand the importance of the job and where it fits in the business? Do they want it? Do they wake up on Monday mornings excited to go to work? And do they have the capacity to do it? Both the skill set and the time requirements to be able to do the job well. Okay, that's not really what's in question here. The other piece, which is equally as important to that, in my world, way more important to that, is how do they fit culturally inside of your community? Mm-hmm. Now, if your community is all in, like, you're a paparazzi, like your company is, you are literally, well, you feed, your drama is a part of your business. Like, that's a good thing. If you are the editor of Us Weekly, like, or
TMZ,
like, okay, that might be part, it might be one of your core values is embracing drama.
Attracted,
like,
to drama.
Yeah, attracted to drama. Like, then this is no big deal. Like, guess what? Like, this is what you signed up for. Yeah. This is what you're looking for. It's the opposite in ours, right? This is not what we want at all. So what you do is you create the filter of what these core values are. What do you want your culture to represent? And then you feed these people through that filter. Same, in the same way you did. Good, fair, or poor across your core values. And if any of them, so let's say this person had like community, like as one of their core values, or like no complaining or positive attitudes or supportive environment. And this was happening. Well, then you feed this person through this filter of supportive environment is one of our core values. How are they representing our core value? Really poorly. Okay. Then the first, now you have a sit down talk with them. You're not representing this. You have a 30-day notice. This is strike one. You have a 30-day notice. You have another conversation in 30 days. This is strike two. It's not happening. You're not representing our culture, our values. If this happens, if we see this again in 30 days, you're no longer a member of the team. Mm-hmm. Documented. So you have the it going along. And what's going to end up happening is this is so arbitrary, I'm making this up, but 7 times out of 10, they're going to leave on their own.
Yeah.
They're going to hear the first warning and be like, whoa, this... what?
Yeah.
And then you hear the second warning and go like, okay, writing's on the wall. This place isn't for me. And they're not going to blame themselves. They're going to blame you.
Of course.
And then it's going to resolve itself anyway. If it doesn't, now you have this documented path of like, remember that fight you had in the parking lot? Remember how this showed up on social media? Remember what you said in the coach's meeting? Like dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. And it reminds me of the conversation we had about the 5 P's of decision-making where the, you know, cause really what you're talking about is kind of principles, right?
Yes.
And then it doesn't matter the details because you've already made the decision, right? You've already decided that these are
who are you? What do you stand for? If they don't,
so it doesn't matter. Like, you don't have to make the decision like, oh, that's another social media post or like that was a thing.
It's done.
You already made the decision. Then it's just acting in accordance with those principles, right? Next question.
I like nothing's new here, right? We just kind of, it's.
Would you like CrossFit to be an Olympic sport?
No.
Love it. Why? And aren't people trying to do this?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe a little bit of context there because I actually don't know too much about it.
Okay. So,
what they call it, like functional fitness, something or other.
So Olympic sport, like, it's a finite game. It's like known rules, known regulations, known every, like, so what you'd have to do is eventually turn this into, if it was to be that, right? Because otherwise what you have is like, the thing is that the sport is always different every single year.
Yep.
So there's going to be this kind of like grayness to it. That doesn't lead itself well, in my opinion, to what's tested at the Olympics.
Right.
This should be a world championships the way it is now. But if you had this, like, who is the governing body? Is it CrossFit? Well, CrossFit then can like determine who, I don't want to get into that, but it's like essentially like I want it to be, remain as this unknown, this unknowable. And I don't think that leads well to the test at the Olympics. Because one year you're going to have things that kind of lean one way, and next year you have things lean another way, and gold medals on the line. And it's
every
like
4 years, it's
just like, would it be cool? Absolutely. Yeah. Would it help my business? Absolutely. Hundredfold, like it'd be an amazing thing for us. Having said that, for the integrity of what it stands for, I don't think it leads itself well, right from the qualification process up to, because you're gonna have qualifiers, right? So then it just, I've thought about it and it just doesn't lead itself well to it. Now, if somebody can further define better, I can't think of a sport at the Olympics that follows this. So they're either like sports that have world records. Yep. What is, no, you're going to run 100 yards. You're going to swim 200 meters. You're going to play a 60-minute basketball game. You know, like it's all kind of done. Well, now you have this thing with like, or you have sports that it's like you beat somebody, right? Like wrestling. Like
you start in the same place and you end in the whoever.
It's just all these knowns. Yeah. Like it's all like everything. It's all known. It doesn't change from year to year. Well, in our sport, it's too variable. Mm. So now we have a handstand pushup, but now we're going to do it your feet over a line. Now we're going to do it where it's strict. Now we're going to do it to a deficit. Now we're going to do it with no wall. And I think it would just lead to too much debate around the test, and it would take away from actual like who won. Mm-hmm. You know, the actual like the credibility goes to the athletes.
Next question. Does nutrition or macro intake differ on off or recovery days versus training days? And if so, how?
So different athletes do this differently. Some athletes do vary their macros and total calorie intake on rest days, it being lower. I am not a proponent of that, but I'm not saying like some of my athletes do it. Yeah. So, but I do believe that recovery days, you're trying to recover. If you happen to get somewhere into a nutritional deficit, like you're not going to be recovering. So I think it's kind of nice, the steady across. Now, the difference would be like if you eat so much because you train so much that you're eating like, you know, 4,800 calories or 7,000 calories because you're training 7 hours a day and you're not doing anything at all that day, well, then that might be excessive and that's not going to help you recover either.
Right.
So we want to be in the ballpark. It depends.
Okay. How does an average CrossFit athlete train for a triathlon? Does the assault bike help with biking? Do you do WADs as prescribed? Do you just use them as strength training? Do you follow a regular triathlon training schedule or create a CrossFit oriented specific training schedule?
How long is the triathlon and what's your goal in the triathlon? So if the goal, if you're going to be running a sprint triathlon, your goal is to finish it, to enjoy it and have a good Saturday, you don't change much at all. You basically do your CrossFit stuff. Maybe you get in the pool a little bit more than you normally would, but essentially you're going to be fit enough to kind of finish that thing. If you're going to be doing a sprint distance triathlon and your paycheck depends on it because you're a professional, it's going to change it drastically. 5-6 days a week, you're gonna be doing swim, bike, run, a combination of swim, bike, run. And then 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 days a week, you might be adding in some CrossFit stuff. Now, that stuff is gonna be a lot more power-based because it's a speed event and that's essentially, right? Those guys are running 6 minute miles. Right. You know, they're kind of going fast. They're biking 24, 25, 26 miles an hour. They're actually in a sprint to propose they'd be going faster than that, 27, 28 miles an hour. Kind of the same questions need to be asked if you just kind of flip it, but now it's the longer distance, right? If you're compete to complete an Ironman, you need to put in the work.
Yeah.
You're going to be training 10 to 20 hours a week in swim, bike, run. And then the CrossFit stuff is then supplemental to keep you from getting hurt, keeping you strong, keeping some muscle, all that stuff. So it really, really depends. If the kind of easy answer is put like on one end of a spectrum, put compete to complete. So you're there to have fun and sprint triathlons. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end is both distance and importance to you. And as you get closer to importance and distance, CrossFit needs to necessarily take a back seat and the CrossFit training needs to come up a little bit. Triathlon training needs to come up a little bit.
Got it. It's funny. Almost every one of these questions, you could begin with, it depends.
Of course.
And then give the answer.
Yeah. You were asking me these things I could give you a very specific question. Answer.
Next question. I am struggling to pick between two different degrees that somewhat deal with the same area of study. How do I know I am picking degree A because I'm more passionate about the material and not because it is easier? Degree B makes more money and it will be harder work to complete. I want to make sure that laziness is not a reason for pursuing degree B. I also don't want money to be the driving factor to choose degree B. It's kind of a little bit like a math problem.
Yeah. A squared plus B squared plus C squared. So if you take the Pythagorean theorem and actually divide it by. Okay. So It's a cool question. This person's obviously has a lot of self-awareness because mm-hmm. they're, I don't want to take the easy road. Yeah. They're actually like literally saying like, I purposely, these people have to be cautious though, right? Because these are the people that end up being investment bankers and right. hating their lives when right. they're 55 years old because they're...
Because they made the smart choice, but maybe not the...
They made the choice that seemed smart at the time.
Right.
So here's a Venn diagram of three circles. And they're all overlapping. In the middle is what we're going to get to. The first circle represents your passion. Yep. So what are you most passionate about? And it sounds like obviously this one is the option, whatever it was, B. The next one is skill sets. Like what are you good at? Mm-hmm. What are you, what can you be world class in? And then the third one is, where is there economic opportunity? And where those three things overlap is what you should be chasing for a vocation. That is the best thing for you. You love it, you're good at it, and you can make money at it. Now, it sounds so obvious when you lay it out like that. But if you think of it the other way, what most people do is they go somewhere else. So maybe I love baseball, but I can't hit a curveball. Mm-hmm. I can't hit anything. So you can make a ton of money and I love it, but I suck at it. It doesn't mean that's not the thing I should be chasing.
Right.
Okay. Ant farming. Man, I'm so passionate about ant farming and I am the best ant farmer in the world. Dude, like how are you going to monetize that at all? Mm-hmm. Like you can't do it. And you take the other things like investment banking and I am a math wizard. Like I can make a ton of money and I'm really good at this, but God, I hate being in an office. I love being in the mountains. Like, okay, where do those three things overlap? And it sounds like for this person, it's pretty clear which of those ones are. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about which is hard and which is easy. It might be easy for you because you like it so much
yeah.
and you're talented at it. That's a good thing. So double down on your strengths. So the thing here is like find the overlap. And I think that that kind of like surmises.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would just add that if you care about it, if you're passionate about it, you'll find a way to make it more challenging. It's not easy for sure, forever. Yeah. It's easy today until you learn more and then it gets harder.
Right? Yeah. So like,
I'm
really good at basketball. I'm the high scorer on my team. Yeah. I've been the MVP all along. Well, great. Yeah. That's in your AAU league. Now like go play for Duke.
Level up a little bit.
Yeah. Now that you're going playing for Duke.
Stops like, how being hard? Easy. Yeah.
Okay, good. You're a starter. Good. Now you got drafted in the NBA. Good. Now how are you? Okay. Are you an all-star? Okay. Are you, the MVP? Are you a Hall of Famer? Are you the best of all time? Like level up.
Next question. I recently attended the 10-year affiliate gathering, and while there are quite a few long-term...
CrossFit affiliate gathering.
There are quite a few long-time affiliate owners. The reality is that many of them, myself included, are still struggling. Many are working other jobs to supplement their income or working crazy long hours in the gym to make it work. I'd be interested in hearing your and Ben's take on what might be the biggest reason that is happening.
I believe it's because people are continuing... 10 years ago, if you got into the game and you enjoyed it and you were passionate about it, you were bringing enough to the table because people would find you because there wasn't that many other opportunities. If somebody wanted this type of training, they needed to come to you.
Yep.
We were in, it was rare. Yep. It was a very special thing to find somebody else that did CrossFit at the time.
Yeah, it was a small pond.
Real small pond. Yeah. And people, I used to drive to Connecticut. I used to drive 2.5 hours on a Saturday to train with people.
Right.
And then drive back.
Yeah.
Because that's, if you wanted to find people like that, find people like you, that's what you did. Well, it's really different now. Just forget about the CrossFit affiliates, which are now 15,000 of them. If you add in other similar training methodologies, I mean, it's probably double that. Yep. I don't know what the number is, but if you include like any of those things.
HIIT gyms, boot camps,
yeah, exactly.
Functional fitness places. Yep.
It's not hard for people to find this thing.
Yeah.
So your competitive advantage has gone away.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is now you need to run this thing. You need to find another competitive advantage. So what is your true niche? Who are you really? This is what I think is the biggest... I think this is what's happening. People opened up and they opened up, and because they opened up, people came to them.
Yep.
And now you have to run it as a business, and you truly have to run it as a business. And if you don't, just like every small, it's not the CrossFit thing. Every small business that is not run well fails. They go away. That's why the failure rate for businesses is like normally it's like 2.5 years or something like that. The number of businesses that are in existence, not CrossFit fail, it's the number of small businesses that are in existence 10 years later is a fraction of what it is. It's somewhere around 10 or 15%. I'm making that number up, but it fits well in a podcast because no one other goes and researches it, but we'll call it 10 or 15%.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with it. So.
Yeah, right. If you say it confidently enough. So it's not unique to us. What any business needs to do is become better at operating the business. So there is so much we could talk about in terms of that. But it, to me, that is the biggest thing is like, don't just be the person, the foodie. I love food and I'm going to open up a restaurant. Well, if you do that, that passion play will pull you along for 24 months for sure. Like just your passion alone. Well, then all of a sudden the grind of the business starts. You get frustrated. You're not making money. People are leaving. And then all of a sudden now it becomes like you have to be able to operate a real business, not just love food.
Totally. Yep. Next question. What are your thoughts on faking it till you make it?
This is a great question. I know they're all good questions, but this one's like, I think you have to put parameters around it because I think it's good and bad. So if we're talking about faking it till you make it in terms of acting the parts, maybe that's like a little bit like character type thing. Like if you are the person like, God, I really want to complain, but I'm going to pretend I'm the type of person that doesn't complain. Don't pretend. If faking it, then over a period of time, that will be, if you're the type of person that, you know, you want to get in the habit of something, maybe that's a better precursor. If you're trying to get in the habit of something, fake it till you make it. But don't be unauthentic. Don't pretend to be someone you're not, especially when it comes to something like knowledge. Don't be in a room full of people and be afraid to like ask the dumb question. Just pretend like you're going along with it. Don't, if you're the CFO of a company, this can make it really off. If you're the CFO of a company, don't fake like you got the numbers all down. You know what the question, don't be afraid to ask the questions because it's going to come back to bite you in the ass really big as opposed to just like maybe for a real quick, like, hey guys, I actually don't know what a SaaS business is. Can you just, I actually don't know what, you know, average lifetime value is. I don't really get how to, how do you measure customer acquisition costs? Like, don't fake like you know those things. If you don't know them in terms of the business thing, like call it out. But in terms of like, if you're trying to be like the hardest worker and you're not, like fake it till you make it. Just be the first one in the office and the last to leave until you actually are that person.
Right. All right, next question. A little bit of a long question, but I liked it so much that I wanted to include as much as I could. There are two CrossFit boxes in our town, a big one with around 300 members and a wee one with around 40 members. Big has a better facility and more classes. It has a head coach who struggles with delegating tasks, upscaling the business, and growing the community. Personal goals per athlete are requested at the beginning of membership, but never revisited. And we often don't know the names of the people we train with. So that's the big
one. Got it.
Wee Box,
okay.
Which I would like to think that the gym's actually called Wee Box, but it's not. Wee Box has less classes four coaches teaching groups of 4 to 6 athletes, so much smaller. We all know each other's names and some of each person's goals. I've trained at the Big Box for 10 months and have lost zero weight and increased some power. I also started training at Wee Box last month, and thanks to more intensive coaching, have made enormous progress. So the question is it okay to be a member at both boxes, or should I focus, or should I choose and focus my efforts on one?
So the answer, to me, the answer would be, is it okay? Absolutely. Of course it's okay. The answer is yes, it's okay. Now, if it becomes like, I should make a decision because I'm spending, you know, $300-$500 a month on memberships. I don't feel like I'm investing into each community and I need to make a decision. Well, then my answer would be with go with your gut. For sure. So if you like the part of being part of the big brand because you were proud to say I'm a member of CrossFit XYZ, then okay, go with that. You've increased your power a little bit. Or if it's more like, no, it's really to me about these people that are investing in the community. I know everyone's name. I'm making tons of progress. Go with that one. But go with your gut. I think most people would go with the Wee Box because they're making, you're seeing more progress. This person seems to value the attention that they give. They value the interaction, the one-on-one, the progress, the attention to community. So it seems like from this really high level question that that's what they value more because that's what they're pulling out. So it seems like that's where they should be going. But if you feel like you're getting benefits from both, like there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Unless you really want to be a part of something. Right. If you really want to be a part of something, well, you don't have two families. You have one family because you want to be a part of that one family.
Last question for today. Can you make it to the CrossFit Games while taking no supplements? And if so, what are the pros and cons if so? And I'm reading into it a little bit, but I think the question might come down to a lot of athletes in the last couple of years have gotten popped for performance enhancing drugs. Oh, and a lot of them,
I did not. Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of them point to like, oh, I took a supplement that had something that I didn't think it had or something like that. So I might be reading into that too much. Mm. But you tell me what you hear in that.
Okay.
Question.
Can you, I did not make that leap, but can you make it to the games without taking supplements? Yes. 100%. Absolutely. So, I mean, you can improve your performance by 20% year over year at, depending on where you're starting. Like you can definitely do that. No supplement in the world, legal supplements in the world, is going to come close to that. They're going to add 1-3% at best. So the answer is yes, 100%. No supplement in the world is going to outdo. We have the five factors of health, right? Supplements is not on there.
Right.
Like nothing, no supplement in the world is going to outdo how you're sleeping, how you're training, your mental state and stress, what you're doing for recovery and your nutrition. Like nothing is going to come even close to those five factors. So 100% you can. Pros and cons to both. I guess a big con would be that your supplements might be tainted.
Right.
You might get popped for something you didn't even know you were taking. That's a major con.
Because supplements are generally like really unregulated and
yeah. So what you want to do is this is when one of my athletes signs on a deal with a company, we put a fair amount of due. I'm not gonna say crazy. We don't go crazy. We don't have those type of resources, but we do pay attention. We do put some due diligence into the manufacturing process and is there cross contamination if they do manufacture. Because like they might be taking a clean product, but the company, this has happened in the CrossFit space before, the company also manufactures non-clean products. Mm. And then they use the same mixing bowls. They're humongous. Yeah. I mean, it's not a kitchen bowl. Yeah. These mixing vats. And if they don't have a good cleaning process, that's enough to taint somebody to pop for a positive test. So we got to make sure that the efficacy is there on the manufacturer side as well. So that's a definite con.
Yeah.
The pros, though, are you can get benefits from supplements. Right. I mean, you can. It's hard for these athletes to get in the right macros and the nutrients without supplementing because real food is just hard to eat that much when you're training 6 hours a day.
Right. Got it. All right, my man. That was a 2-minute drill. Thank you to everybody who sends me questions. Thank you, everybody, to send me these questions today. And we will see everyone next week.
Thanks, Pat.
You can get every episode of Chasing Excellence wherever you listen to your podcasts or on YouTube. Until next time. Thank you for listening.